Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff, read by Gretchen Miller, featuring Green Smoothie Girl and SmittenKitchen.com. We're going to start off with a recipe from Green Smoothie Girl for oatmeal blueberry muffins. Are you looking for a yummy gluten-free muffin recipe? Try my oatmeal blueberry muffins. They're filling and healthy, good for a snack or on-the-go breakfast, and you can modify the base recipe too. Try using different berries, nuts, or seeds for a new taste every time. Oatmeal blueberry muffins. It's going to take 5 minutes to, I don't know her symbols here. Get ready to mix. 5 minutes to mix, 25 minutes to cook, and 30 minutes total. You'll need 1/2 cup of sorghum flour, 1 cup of amaranth flour, 1 cup of quick cook oats, 1 teaspoon of sea salt, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, 1/2 cup of unsweetened applesauce, 1 egg, 1 cup of rice milk or any favorite dairy-free milk, 1 tablespoon of honey, 1/2 to 3/4 cup of dried blueberries or favorite dried fruits, nuts, or seeds. You're going to first preheat the oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. Add the sorghum, amaranth, oats, sea salt, and baking soda to a mixing bowl and stir to combine. In a separate bowl, mix the applesauce, egg, rice milk, and honey. Add dry ingredients to the wet ingredients and stir to combine. Mix in the dried blueberries. Line a muffin pan with 10 to 12 baking cups and spoon the mixture into the baking cups evenly. You'll bake for 20 to 25 minutes, rotating the muffin pan halfway through baking. Check the muffins with a toothpick for doneness and enjoy. Next, we're going to have a recipe for a New York crumb cake from SmittenKitchen.com. Hasn't it always been too long since your last slice of profoundly perfect crumb cake? You know, the kind that's a hefty square with at least as much height from big brown sugar and cinnamon crumbs as from a golden buttery sour cream enriched and vanilla scented cake? Yes, me too. I didn't expect to be back here so soon, though. I truly believe I'd finish my crumb cake degree in 2021 with a still perfect in every way Big Apple crumb cake, and there's a link at smittenkitchen.com. But sometimes perfection is a process. It turns out that the Big Apple crumb cake, minus the apples, wasn't exactly what I want in a New York crumb cake. This is a few adjustments, more sour cream, a splash of water or milk, and, please stay calm, a 25% thicker crumb layer yielded this dream square, almost comically top-heavy. The kind of thing you might gaze at in a bakery case and hope for once it tastes as good as it looks. I've tested it so many times, I am pretty sure there's not a family member, a teacher in my daughter's school, or a friend on a group text chain, "Help, I made more crumb cake and need someone to collect it," that hasn't tried it. And now it's your turn. Here's the recipe for New York crumb cake. Serves 12 to 16, takes 1 hour, and the source is Smitten Kitchen. For the crumbs, you'll need 10 tablespoons of unsalted butter, melted, 1/2 cup of dark brown sugar, 1/4 cup of granulated sugar, 1 1/4 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon of kosher salt, 1 2/3 cups of all-purpose flour. For the cake, you'll need 6 tablespoons of unsalted butter, softened, and 1/2 cup of granulated sugar, and 1 large egg, 1/2 cup of sour cream, 2 tablespoons of water or milk, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1 cup of all-purpose flour, 1 1/4 teaspoon of baking powder, 3/4 teaspoon of kosher salt. For the cake, you're just going to need some powdered sugar for dusting at the end. You're going to heat your oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. You're going to lightly coat an 8-inch square or a 9-inch cake pan with butter or nonstick spray. For extra security, line it with parchment paper. To make the crumbs, You'll whisk the butter, sugars, cinnamon, and salt together until evenly mixed. Add flour and mix it until it disappears. It's going to be very thick. Press it evenly into the bottom of the bowl and set it aside. Then you're going to make the cake by beating the butter with sugar until lightened and fluffy. Add egg, water or milk, sour cream, and vanilla and beat until combined. Sprinkle the surface of batter with baking powder and salt and beat well to combine. Add flour and mix only until it disappears. Then assemble. You're going to scrape the batter into a prepared cake pan and smooth it flat. Use a spoon to loosen the crumbs from the bottom of the bowl where they've rested, breaking them up into big and small rubble. Sprinkle evenly over the batter. Then you're going to bake for about 30 to 35 minutes or until a toothpick inserted into the cake just below the crumbs comes out batter-free. Check in a few spots in case it has baked unevenly. Cool to lukewarm if you can bear it before dusting it generously with powdered sugar and cutting the cake into squares or wedges. As far as doing ahead, this cake keeps in an airtight container at room temperature for 3 to 4 days, but I like it best in the first two. Next, we're going to have a recipe for stovetop Americanos from smittenkitchen.com. Last December, I announced to, I'm sure, at least 10,000 well-deserved eye rolls that after 10 years of food blogging and one, actually now two, cookbooks, I had finally learned how to make coffee. I mean, yeah, it was melodramatic. I, too, can scoop whatever the Maxwell House can says into the filter and press the on button, as I did most weekend mornings as a kid. What I meant was that I had figured out how to make the coffee that I most like to drink and spent too much money on at coffee shops these days, and I had found this delight with the simplest old-fashioned thing, a stovetop espresso maker. You know, it's one of those that has a shape like an hourglass. I then promised you a tutorial. Well, it's been 6 months. I got nervous. It would be a little weird if I were suddenly an expert on something that I'd been doing for 7 weeks. I thought that I needed more time with it. So in these 6 months, I've become one of those people who previously baffled me because they said they don't like to buy coffee out. They like theirs at home better. But here we are. So, a few nuts and bolts. This is not intended as a conversation about why one type of coffee making apparatus is best. It does not matter. It only matters what works for you. For me, petite, hands-off, no electrical cords, no counter space required, no filters I have to keep in stock, and I really, really hard to mess up, I use a Bialetti Mocha Express 6-cup. But most of the other brands of stovetop espresso makers are very similarly constructed. It also comes in one, which I imagine is cute as a button, 3, 9, and 12-cup sizes. This 6-cup stovetop espresso maker can be used to make 6 single shots of espresso, but most mornings I use it to make 2 hot or iced Americanos. Americanos are American-style coffee, bigger cup, less strong, made with an espresso machine by adding hot water. The strength is similar to a drip cup, but the flavor has the richness of espresso. How much water to espresso? Well, nobody agrees. For hot, I like a little less water than espresso. For cold, I add no water. A cup of ice provides just the right amount, and I'll show you how in a minute. Do not put your stovetop espresso maker in the dishwasher. It will ruin it. Don't wash it with soap. I scrub mine lightly with a soft brush, easier to get in all the corners, under very hot water, removing any debris, and then I let it dry before reassembling it, and that is it. You can replace the rubber gasket or metal filter if you want. I have a couple of spares, but I also know people have theirs for a decade without doing so. My manufacturer's instructions also suggest you check the washer on the valve from time to time for wear. It's almost impossible to talk about a stovetop espresso maker without hearing a story about one that exploded. A terrifying thought. From what I understand, just keep the valve, that's this little nut or screw on the side of the water compartment, keep that valve clear and you'll be doing fine. It's there to release steam, so you probably don't want to keep it from doing that. I'm sure there are a gazillion other more beloved espressos and less expensive out there. But just for reference, I use this one. And again, there's a link at smittenkitchen.com if you search for stovetop Americanos. I opened the can, took a huff, and was immediately transported to long-ago trips to Italy, pre-husband, pre-kids, pre-life full of responsibilities and daily adulting, involuntarily yelled, "Take all of my money!" and I bought a case. I regret nothing. My pot's instructions say, not terribly helpfully, use ground coffee specifically for a mocha coffee maker. Do not use too fine of a ground of coffee. What it means is that espresso powder ground for stovetop espresso makers have a slightly more coarse grind than espresso used in coffee shop style machines. So how do you know if your coffee is too finely ground? Well, it shows up in your mug and annoys you. Aren't you guys glad that you have me here to bestow such high-level expertise? Wait a minute, don't answer that. Here's the recipe, stovetop Americano. Serves from a 6-cup pot. Time, it takes 5 minutes. I realize that this might possibly take as long to read as it does to brew your coffee, but I found almost every tutorial, video, and set of instructions online confusing because they wanted me to do things that just weren't working for me. So I hope the below covers both paths, the advice from pros, but also what works for this coffee amateur. Water to fill the pot without going over the valve, about 1.5 cups, and then about 5 tablespoons of ground espresso powder. You're going to pour in the water, but fill the lower chamber of your pot with cold water until it reaches just below the valve. I go to the bottom edge of it. My pot holds 1.5 cups. Some coffee aficionados may say that the secret to great stovetop espresso is starting with hot water. I did it a few times. It did not change my coffee life, but who knows, it might change yours. They'll also tell you that you cannot make half pots, but I do it almost every day. I simply pour in a measured 3/4 cup instead. Then you're going to add the coffee. Fill the funnel, this is the part with a perforated inside, and fill that with ground espresso. Do not tamp it down, as it makes it harder for the coffee to brew, but you can top the outside of the funnel to compress it slightly. I find it takes just shy of 5 tablespoons, or 14 or 15 grams of the espresso that I use to fill it. Making only one Americano? Well, use 2.5 tablespoons of espresso, or 7 to 8 grams. Is that 7/8? I don't know if it's 7 or 8, or if it's 7/8 grams, and 14/15 grams. I'm going to let you guys sort that out if you use grams. Sweep any excess espresso powder off the rim. And then you're going to assemble the pot. Make sure that the flat filter disc and rubber gasket are in place, and then tightly screw the upper part of the pot onto the base. I do not go crazy muscling it shut, I just twist it snugly. Brew. You're going to put it over your smallest burner. For gas stovetops, make sure the flame is not larger than the bottom of the pot. The flame should not come around the sides of the pot. I assume that the handle was heat safe because it's a stovetop espresso maker and gas stoves have been around forever. I was wrong. Mine is a bit mottled these days as a result. Medium heat seems about right, but if your coffee tastes burnt to you, try a lower heat next time. Heat until the water boils and the coffee begins to come out of the center post. There will be a gurgling sound during this process. At this point, almost every demo I have watched says you can turn the flame off because it will continue to brew, and too much toasting is at odds with the rich flavor you're hoping to get from your coffee. However, mine basically stops brewing when I do, leading to 1 inch, not 2 cups, of coffee in the pot. So I just turn the heat down. Some people insist upon brewing with the lid open and others leave it closed. And although it's not supposed to make a difference in the final flavor either way, I leave mine closed or it sputters out all over the stove. Meanwhile, ready your mugs and glasses. While you're waiting, this takes 3 to 5 minutes to brew, get your cup ready. For 2 iced Americanos, fill 2-pint, that's 16-ounce glasses, to the top with ice. Maybe you live with a toddler who is obsessed with ice and comes running every time you crack the tray. Be sure to leave some left over for her or suffer the auditory consequences. For two hot Americanos, pour 1/2 to 3/4 cup of boiling water in each of the two mugs. You'll figure out your preferred level soon enough, but this is your first time, begin with a lower amount. If you're making one hot Americano, might you just use the full 1.5 cups of water, twice the water, and 2.5 tablespoons of espresso, i.e. the amount for one Americano, instead of adding hot water at the end? Yes, and I do this too. Finish and pour. When the top of the pot is full of coffee, you'll hear a change in sound, or my pot's instruction says, hazel brown foam appears just seconds before the coffee is completely done. But I've never noticed this. Remove it from the stove and immediately pour between the two prepared cups. My pot's instructions also say to give it a stir before pouring because the first stuff that comes out is more concentrated, but I just do a little pour at a time in each cup, switching between them to ensure neither loses out if the first and second halves have different intensities. And then frappe it. If your other long-lost coffee memories like mine reside in the frappes in Greece, I then dump our ice cubes into a cocktail shaker and shake some foam into it. This is a weekend thing. Weekends are lazier. Weekends are the best. And it looks really, really good. Next, we've got a recipe for a Mean Green Detox Smoothie. So, this includes some spirulina. Have you done much cooking with spirulina? Not that we're exactly cooking here, but you get the point. Well, this Mean Green Detox Smoothie will change that. You're probably familiar with the rest of the ingredients, but do you know exactly just how good they are for you? You might be surprised. For this smoothie, you'll need 1 cup of water, 1/2 cup of ice, 1 cup of almond milk, 1 banana, 2 stalks of celery chopped, 1/2 of a chopped English cucumber, 1.5 cups or 3 large handfuls of kale, rinsed and destemmed, 1 small organic lemon, quartered, 1 cup of pineapple, fresh or frozen, 1/2 teaspoon of spirulina or chlorella, 2 tablespoons of chia seeds, or you can do sprouted flax, and 1 to 2 servings of green smoothie protein grill powders or any other protein powder that you have. You're going to place all ingredients into a high-powered blender and mix until very smooth to enjoy. If you want to use sprouted flax or what I call sprouted tri-omega, which is flax, chia, and broccoli seeds in your smoothies, these ingredients will help optimize your detox results. So what is a detox anyway? I'll give you a little rundown here, and if you're interested in more, you can take my free Detox Secrets Masterclass. There's a link at greensmoothiegirl.com. The benefits of detoxing are numerous. It clears any brain fog and may help alleviate depression, anxiety, and inflammation. It can cause you to lose weight too, and these are just some of the benefits. Detoxing is something that our bodies do daily, hourly, by the minute and second through our organs. Your liver, kidneys, colon, skin, and even your lungs are all working to clear you of the toxins that you breathe, ingest, and touch every day. Wouldn't it be nice to help your body help you? You can help your body out by drinking an easy-to-digest drink or smoothie, like our Mean Green Detox Smoothie. It's not only easier on the gut, but it's also packed with healing nutrients for each part of your body. Let's take a look at some of the ingredients. Celery has important antioxidants that reduce inflammation, support digestion, and have an alkalizing effect on the body. Remember, an acidic environment is optimal for cancer and other diseases, so we want to stay as alkaline as possible. Celery has a low glycemic index, is full of vitamins K, A, and C, folate, potassium, and lots of fiber to help the gut move things easily. Spirulina is a thread-like green bacteria that can be dried and consumed, usually in a powder form. It's a powerful antioxidant and with amazing anti-inflammatory properties. It can lower triglyceride levels, which is the fat in your blood that can cause heart disease. It may even have anti-cancer properties, and of course this has a little asterisk by it. Pineapple has lots of vitamin C and fiber, just like celery. By eating pineapple in a detox, you're giving your systems a boost to work better and easier. It contains manganese, a trace mineral that the body needs in small amounts for the normal functioning of the brain, nervous system, and enzyme systems. Your body can store this up, but it cannot make it. You need to get it from your diet. So enzymes are what help the body do things, like digest food. So these are just some of the ingredients. Why not try out the Mean Green Detox Smoothie and let us know how you feel in the comment section below. Next, we've got another recipe from smittenkitchen.com. This one for weeknight tomato soup. Yum! So while this is not the Smitten Kitchen's only tomato soup, there's one with roasted summer tomatoes capped with an open-faced grilled cheese sandwich in the archives. And further back, a classic cream of tomato soup adapted from Cook's Illustrated. Neither are this, a seasonless tomato soup that I can make on any rainy day, along with the non-negotiable grilled cheese sandwiches, in under an hour. Both of the archive recipes have their charms. The first is great when tomatoes are at their peak. The second is excellent but fussy, more ideal for when you've got the time or patience to show off. But this has eclipsed both in the rotation for the last couple of winters, and a few things make it perfect for us. Yes, grocery store tomatoes. If you, like me, buy cherry or grape tomatoes far more often than you use them, this soup is for you. No, I don't mean glorious peak season cherry tomatoes from a garden or a farm stand on a hot summer day, saving those for snacking or a salad. I truly mean even the highly mediocre ones that you might find on sale at a chain store in the dead of winter. This soup makes the argument that even bland off-season cherry and grape tomatoes will provide more flavor and nuance than canned tomatoes, and the proof will be in the bowl. And sweetness. Cream of tomato soup recipes add a little sugar, but I find that store-bought grape tomatoes provide enough without it. Has a simple base. Everything else is about simply layering in flavor. Onions cooked in butter until sweet and lightly browned at the edges. Garlic, pepper flakes to taste, a splash of sherry if that's your thing, tomato paste, or any kind of broth that you want to use, vegetable or chicken. It simmers for 15 minutes, and this is when you make the grilled cheese sandwiches, by the way, and it blends smooth. The cream is optional. This was intended to be a cream of tomato soup, and you can, if you'd like, add cream at the end to taste. But the texture is so velvety and smooth from the tomato and sweet onions, you might find that you don't need or want it at all. It's also riffable. This isn't my new weekend or weeknight tomato soup. It's a foundation that I've used for a lot of tweaked leftovers. Sometimes I'll add cooked lentils, but even some tortellini and a handful of spinach wilted in, plus a little Parmesan will work on the top nicely too. And it works as well with a French onion soup styled grilled cheese on top as the roasted tomato soup does. Here's the recipe for weeknight tomato soup. Serves 4 regular servings or 6 mug sized. Takes 45 minutes, and the source is right here at Smitten Kitchen. You're going to need 3 tablespoons of unsalted butter, 2 medium white onions diced, that'll be about 2.5 cups, 3 garlic cloves thinly sliced, 4 tablespoons of tomato paste, 1 tablespoon of sherry, this is optional, 1.25 pounds of cherry or grape tomatoes halved, kosher salt, freshly ground black pepper and red pepper flakes, 3 cups of vegetable or chicken broth, 1 to 2 teaspoons of sherry vinegar to finish, this is optional, and 1/4 cup of heavy cream or more to taste, also optional at the end. To make this soup, in a 3 to 4 quart saucepan, you're going to melt butter over medium-high heat and then add the onions. Cook, stirring until the onions are tender and beginning to brown at the edges about 5 to 7 minutes. Add the garlic and cook for 1 minute. Add the tomato paste and cook for 2 to 3 more minutes. Add sherry if you're using and cook for 1 minute, and then the tomatoes. Cook the tomatoes, mashing them slightly with your spoon for 3 minutes. Then add the broth and seasoning to taste. I usually start with 1 teaspoon of kosher salt, many grinds of black pepper, and a couple of pinches of pepper flakes. Bring the mixture to a simmer and cover the pot and cook at simmer for 15 to 20 minutes. This is a great time to prepare the grilled cheese sandwiches if you're making them. To finish, either with an immersion blender or in a full-size blender, blend the hot soup carefully until totally smooth. My immersion blender often misses some tomato skins, so go around the pot a few extra times. Taste and adjust the seasoning as needed. If you'd like the soup to be creamy, add it a splash at a time, stirring until you reach your desired level. Finally, you can add 1 teaspoon of sherry vinegar for a little brightness at the end, and a second teaspoon if it needs more. To serve, you're going to ladle it into bowls or mugs and finish with a little bit of freshly ground black pepper and surround with grilled cheese fingers for dipping. To make the grilled cheese fingers, for one sandwich, you're going to spread the outside of 2 slices of sandwich bread with either softened butter or a thin layer of mayonnaise. A little goes a long way. And then fill with the cheese of your choice. I like to use 1 slice of American cheese for meltiness and some sharp grated cheddar for flavor. Place in a cold, heavy skillet and turn the heat to a medium-low. Cook slowly until the underside is a deep, even golden brown. Flip the sandwich over and cook on the second side until it matches the first side and cut it into strips. Yummo! Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff, read by Gretchen Miller.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.